I'm Marty Moscoe, welcome to Radio Times. You don't have to be a combat veteran to experience PTSD. Taylor Greger was a U.S. Navy rescue swimmer who was haunted by what he had seen after he left the service. He was anxious and angry and tried to commit suicide. He decided to sail around the dangerous waters of Cape Horn to raise awareness about PTSD and suicides in the military and face his own demons. He enlisted the help of his friend Stephen O'Shea, who had been interviewing veterans about their rocky return to civilian life for a book and had no sailing experience. The film Hell or High Seas is the story of their adventures, violent storms, numerous engine problems, pirates, times of despair, terror, and boredom, and exhilaration about the beauty of the open ocean and surviving and completing their mission. We invited them to join us today in Radio Times to tell us more about their trip and PTSD among veterans, which rarely gets discussed. Taylor Greger joining us by Skype. Taylor, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Wow, yeah, thanks for having us. That was a hell of an intro.
Well, it's a hell of a documentary, so we will get to all of that. And Stephen O'Shea, should mention, is the narrator for the film. And Stephen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. Also with us is documentary filmmaker and WHYY alum Glenn Holston, who directed the film. And Glenn, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, Marty. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Well, let's begin where the film begins. And this is the very beginning of this documentary, and it is narrated by our guest, Stephen O'Shea. Let's give it a listen.
We all have a primal connection to the sea. We're drawn to it for comfort or out of fear. For Taylor, I think it's where he went to be born again. I also believe that a part of him went there to die.
That's a powerful way to start the film. Taylor, at that time, did that kind of summarize where you were at?
Yeah, completely. On the head.
And this was sailing around the world, actually, had been a many-year dream for you, even before the military, correct?
It was, yeah. It was kind of the one thing I remembered about who I was, what I wanted to do in this world was sail. And so, yeah.
Well, let me go to you, Stephen. We heard your voice there. You had, can I say, no sailing experience before you agreed to go with Taylor?
Certainly, no sailing experience relevant to what we were doing. I think I'd been on a boat on the water a few times, but never really been manning the lines or working like we did to get to where we did.
So why did you say yes?
Honestly, that's a great question that I'm not sure I have the full answer to, even to this day. There was definitely, the appeal of adventure and being there, for Taylor and with Taylor. And then calling attention to an issue that for both Taylor and I became really personal once we started planning this trip.
I want to get into all that. Let me get you as part of the conversation as well. How did you get involved in this project?
Well, I became aware of Stephen and Taylor's journey halfway through their journey. Stephen's aunt reached out to me and said that her nephew was doing something interesting, and they were creating Patreon videos to help support their journey. And she asked if I would look at these videos, and I said sure, of course. And I looked at them, and I was just so taken with. Both Stephen and Taylor, honestly, they were such strong humans and doing such a wonderful job at documenting their journey to that point. And so I decided to figure out if I could help them.
And everyone has a cell phone these days, including on sailing boats to Cape Horn, right, Glenn?
Well, communication was mostly via email, I guess, while they were on their journey. But there would be long times of silence, too, where I was thinking, jeepers, I hope they're okay.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. Well, let me go back to you, Taylor, and we learn a little bit about you. You were a swimmer in high school. In fact, it sounds like that's where you got to know Stephen. Tell us why you wanted to take this journey.
Yeah, Stephen and I met on the swim team in College Station, Texas. That's kind of a It's a big question. We'll try and unpack the best I can for you. Why I wanted to do this. It started because of Stephen's book, the stories that he was writing, about the time I was getting out of the military.
Ooh, I don't think we have a very good phone. Yeah, I don't think we have a very good phone line with Taylor. So let's see if we can fix it. Oh, I think we lost him. Okay, this is live radio, folks, and things like this happen. Well, Stephen O'Shea, let me go back to you. And Taylor made a reference to the fact that you had been interviewing a number of veterans about this difficult return to civilian life. Help us understand what you learned from talking to all these veterans.
You know, that's a journey that took me many years from my undergraduate through my PhD. And it began as a kind of a study of moral injury and, you know, the experience of combat for veterans who did actually experience combat. And gradually I found that the more interesting story, and I felt like the story that wasn't being talked about enough, was actually just veterans returning home. The struggles that they faced coming back from their service were oftentimes more debilitating and more dangerous than overseas. And for veterans at large, that can kind of be summed up in a single statistic, which is that the most dangerous year of their life is going to be their first year out of the military. And that's because that's the year that they're at the greatest risk for suicide.
Which seems so counterintuitive, but obviously, Stephen, so critical to understand.
Absolutely, yeah. And Taylor's willingness to be the subject for this story, and to be able to talk about his experiences leaving the military and, you know, his own suicide attempt was something that I feel like we can't overstate. You know, it's just his sacrifice for this film has been, it's been huge, and it's really made a huge impact as well.
Well, I'm glad to say that Taylor is back with us, hopefully still on Skype. And Taylor, you're very honest, you're very open, you're very direct, you're tearful at times, talking about, and I know you have a child at home, as I said, live radio, folks, but nonetheless, you know, you're very honest about this really difficult time for you, this re-entry into civilian life after what you had seen as a Navy swimmer.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, that was when Stephen and I first thought about doing this and talk about these things. You know, one thing we kept coming back to is like, we can't cover up anything. It has to be as real as we can make it, good and bad. So we said, you know, I mean, our motto from the beginning was you're either all in or you're not. So we decided that if we were going to talk about it, we're going to talk about everything. We're going to do it all. We're going to try and show it all as much as we can, because at that point we didn't really feel like there was anything out, any kind of media that covered what PTSD was really like. All you kind of see is in movies. You can read about it too, but there wasn't anything that really showed what that experience was like. So we set out from the beginning just to kind of no holds barred and cover it all.
Well, in fact, let me play a scene from the documentary, and this is you, Taylor, you know, talking about what it was like, and sort of re-entry back into civilian life. Let's give it a listen.
I didn't think that it was going to affect me that bad. I didn't think I was going to have a hard time with it, but I did. I would drive around in my truck, and my heart rate would start pumping. I could feel my face heat up. I would be shaking and tense, you know, like I was about to get in a fight. I'd start crying. My emotions flooded out. I wasn't in control of what was happening to my body. It just happened, and I didn't know why.
I mean, Taylor, so scary to have those physical reactions and feelings and not be able to understand why.
It was. That's what I had no idea. And I didn't have any concept to kind of grasp what was going to happen to me whenever I got out. I knew I was going to have to come to terms with, you know, what happened overseas and what we did. But I didn't understand the physical effects that it took on my body. And Stephen was, again, the first person that actually explained it to me and really opened my eyes. You know, it was a light switch moment. He was the first person that said, you know, you can't expect your body to go through that much stress and adrenaline for 6 years on end and nothing physically change with your body. And that kind of blew me away. And then he showed me all his research that's been done over the States. This research has been done since 2007, 2001.
Yep.
About how your mind has changed, and we talk about that in the film. That was kind of like the pinnacle of the film for us. That's one thing we really wanted to show in the film, was on a physiological level how your body changed. And that was the biggest issue for me, was you're kind of going through, you're trying to work through everything that happened overseas, and on top of that, your body just runs away from you for no reason. It just starts dumping adrenaline into it, and you kind of lose control of your body. And that, I mean, that just compounds, and it's scary. I was scared out of my mind. I didn't know what was happening to me. And then, you know, whenever Stephen explained this is how it changed physically, then that gives you hope, you know. It gives you a reason, well, if it changed, I can change it back. I can get healthy again. And that's what we wanted to show with the film.
Absolutely. And Stephen, we're really, I mean, in many ways, talking about fight or flight, right? It's just always sort of being, even if you're not in combat, but you're still dealing with these crisis situations, there's always that sense of vigilance.
Absolutely, yeah. And the way that kind of manifests itself in the mind and the body is through prolonged exposure to cortisol. So chronic stress is kind of like the medical term for it. But Taylor was absolutely experiencing chronic stress on his, you know, sometimes they'd go on 16-hour flights, and as a rescue swimmer, yeah, you know, Taylor can talk more to this, but they were vigilant the entire time, and they had to be.
Because you're looking, you know, I mean, what are you looking for? You're looking for bodies in the ocean, right?
Yeah. And most of the time, whenever somebody's in the water, all you can see is their head floating. So some of the training flights we'd do, we'd throw a coconut in the water, and you'd have to go find the coconut at nighttime. That's about what it looks like. So from 500 feet, trying to look for something the size of a coconut, and if you're dozing off, you're going to miss it. It's not a big speck to find.
No, and what a huge responsibility on top of that, right?
Yeah, that was the hard part dealing with it, because a lot of times, and I mean, it's just the sad reality, we didn't find them. We didn't find a lot of people.
Because it's the ocean, right?
It's massive. One of the things I tell everybody when we're sailing is if you don't have any kind of light source at nighttime, your chances are pretty slim. So if you don't have any kind of flare or even your phone, because we fly with MEGs at night, so even your screen on your phone, we could see that a couple miles away. But if you don't have anything and you're just floating there in the darkness and the sea, the chances are we won't find you.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very short break and get back to our conversation. That's Taylor Greger, Naviation Rescue Swimmer Veteran. Also with us, Stephen O'Shea, and together they sailed to Cape Horn in Chile, and it's documented in a new film, Hell or High Seas, directed by our third guest, Glenn Holston. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, talking with Navy veteran Taylor Greger and his friend Stephen O'Shea, who decided to sail around the dangerous waters of Cape Horn to raise awareness about PTSD in the military. Their incredible story is told in the documentary Hell or High Seas, directed by Glenn Holston, who also joins us today on Radio Times. And you can join us as well. If this is a story that resonates with you, email us at radiotimes@whyy.org, especially if you are a veteran. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Glenn, I was emailing with you about some questions that I had about your involvement in this film, and you wrote back about being a kid who grew up with a mother with depression, and how this also kind of wasn't talked about in the family. I wonder if you could add just some of your own personal story to what we've been talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I find really important with the work that I love to do is creating spaces where people feel, first of all, giving vocabulary to experiences so that people don't feel like they can talk about what they don't have words for,
right.
But also making people feel not alone, that they're not having this journey by themselves. And that was one of the things that was super important for Taylor, is to realize that he wasn't the only person having this experience as he learned more about what he was experiencing and Stephen informed him. But in my life, you know, my family life, my mom lived with depression when I was a teenager, and as a teenage boy, I frankly, honestly, was embarrassed and felt like didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to help her, and I didn't know how to talk to her about what she was experiencing. And my family did the best they could, you know, but there just, it wasn't in our vocabulary, literally. Luckily, my dad, you know, found terrific support, and my mom had help that she needed and, mm-hmm. and was had a great end of her life. So that's a good end to the story.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's finding the words, right? Mm-hmm. Using the words and what words can do to help us name things, but then also heal from them. Taylor, if I can go back to you, and I do want to talk about The Old Lady, which is the name of your boat, and your various adventures. But you do, because we are talking about PTSD and frankly, you know, the problem of suicide in the military, you went so far as to try to kill yourself.
Yep, I did. One of the lowest moments of my life, for sure. I don't have anything other to say about it than there's just... I didn't see another option. I didn't see another way to live in this world. You know, you wake up and you see the worst thing in this world every single day, all day long. That eats at you. And then when you're not in control of your body, is in my mind, there wasn't much else to do. You know, I didn't want to live like that the rest of my life. I didn't see a point to it. And, I just didn't see a way out.
The gun didn't go off. I mean, it's, you know, I can't imagine that moment, to be honest with you.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Me neither. I don't know. I still don't know. I still don't know what happened. I still don't know why, but, you know, as soon as it happened, I guess, you know, people ask, like, did you have, like, a come-to-Jesus moment? Did you see anything? I was like, not really. I really didn't, man. The only thing I thought about was I just didn't want any of my buddies to feel the way I did in that moment. And, you know, that's kind of what drove all of this. I just wanted to find a way to make sure that guys getting out had an option, that they knew that they weren't alone. And I don't think anybody should ever feel that alone.
Absolutely. Well, you decided to sail to Cape Horn, I mean, which you describe, Stephen O'Shea, as the Mount Everest of the ocean. And I've, you know, they're just sort of chilling, scary scenes from this documentary where we see, you know, what the elements were like. But why was that your destination, Taylor? Why did you want to go there? Taylor?
Like you said, it is the Mount Everest of the seas. And, you know, when we were talking about making film, using film to talk about PTSD, especially reaching the veteran community, we were like, if we're going to do this, we've got to do something that people are going to want to pay attention to.
Yeah.
At that time, you know, there's a lot of kind of YouTubes out there about sailing the islands and stuff. We're like, well, if we're just a couple guys talking about our feelings on a boat, nobody's going to watch that. If we're sailing around the islands, it's not very, very interesting. So we're like, well, we're going to have to do the baddest thing in the world that we can do to try and grab people's attention and reach as many veterans as we can. And the only thing in the world that meets that standard is Cape Horn.
So it's Cape Horn, yeah.
It's kind of a no-brainer for us.
And Stephen O'Shea, were you ready for that?
Definitely not.
Definitely not. That's right. How could one be ready for that, right?
Right, and that kind of ended up being the mentality that we adopted was, you know, by the time we got down there, we would have experienced the education we needed, I guess, to get around the horn safely. And I think it kind of ended up playing out that way, although we did have a bit of a baptism by fire in the beginning.
Storms, right? I mean, it seemed like one storm after another, and then engine problems, and then you two got in a big fight, and you know, and it kind of goes from there. Actually, before I get back to you, Glenn, to you, Taylor, the boat is called The Old Lady. I'm a bit of an old lady myself, so tell me how and why you came up with that name.
Yeah, well, when I was rebuilding her there in Pensacola, she still didn't have a name, and Stephen flew back from Scotland to help me rebuild her towards the last leg, and we were talking. We talked for weeks. We're like, dude, what are we going to name her? But it turned out that every night when I got off work, I'd be like, all right, it's time to go work on the old lady. Time to go spend time with the old lady. And so Stephen was one. I was like, do we need to just name her the old lady? We already called her that anyways. Like, okay.
And she got you there, right? Not without some problems, but she got you there.
She did. She was not happy about it. She had an attitude, but she took care of us whenever it counted, for sure.
And, Stephen, you guys used things like YouTube videos to kind of figure out how to patch this boat up and make her seaworthy, but also help to fix the problems that arose.
Yeah. YouTube ended up being our best friend when it came to refitting that boat and taking care of her along the way.
And to you, Glenn, I don't know how many hours of footage you got, but when you looked at the footage, what did you see?
Well, the footage, there was so much footage, Marty. There was hundreds of hours of footage. Stephen and Taylor did such a great job of documenting it. And the moments that they didn't document was when they were basically saving their lives. And those are the moments we recreate in the film with animation. But there was so much drama, so much beauty. They had a drone with them. There's these amazingly wide shots that show basically how alone they are in the middle of this ocean. I thought it was rich with potential to make a visual film, but also the story is so strong. I mean, we've got, I always call them the writer and the fighter on the boat. They have to have a relationship. We have to explore that. They have all these dangers that they face so bravely and honestly, and they're always driven by this need to complete their mission to better the world for veterans who are, you know, servicemen and women who are coming out, and they want to make the world a better place for them. A lot of good elements.
Yeah, and Taylor, I mean, here you and Stephen, and then you're joined by another veteran about halfway through your journey. But nonetheless, the two of you on a small boat, there's no place to get away from the other person. How did you manage such close quarters, even with a good close friend?
We read and listened to audiobooks a lot. Audiobooks are kind of like our movies out there, so that would take up a lot of hours during the day whenever nothing was really going on. But, you know, we kind of had our own spaces, and we'd respect that, especially when we were out at sea. You know, if somebody was above deck, just kind of hanging out, let them have their own time. You get used to it. Your body kind of adjusts to living in those close quarters. My line, it's different for everybody, but whenever you're in kind of different environments, it takes a little bit of time for your body to adjust. Then it's like it's normal for me. It's about a week and a half, 2 weeks, and then I'm in it like it's my life. So I don't know. It's kind of weird to explain.
And I noticed you all sailed with your feet.
Yeah.
It's just
you
more
can't drink rum if your hands are on the wheel.
Oh, is that the explanation?
No, we didn't have autopilot or anything. And you'd obviously have to eat whenever you're on watch. So you learn really quick to steer with your feet so you can eat while you're still sailing.
And how good a sailor, Stephen, did you become?
You know, I still don't feel like I'm anywhere near as good as Taylor. But I had a moment when we were down in the channel in Patagonia where we shut off the engine and we were just sailing and kind of tacking across into the wind across the channel. And I felt really good. It felt amazing, honestly. So sailing is really an incredible experience once you get out there and you're surrounded by all that beauty, and you're just using the elements to fuel yourself.
And there are days when it's, you know, gale force winds, and there are days when there's almost no wind, Stephen.
Yeah, and honestly, our first storm, I was at the helm when the storm hit as we're crossing the Gulf, and Taylor quickly took over after we kind of lowered the mainsail and got past that first wave. But, eventually I had to take my turn at the helm, and I didn't see how we could last in the swells that we were in and in the seas that we were in. I didn't see how we could last through the night. But those boats and the old lady in particular, they just flow, they go with the flow, you know, and they rise up these waves that seem like they're just going to crash over you, and then they coast down them, and you get through it.
That's Stephen O'Shea. He's an author, filmmaker, was a first mate on this boat, The Old Lady, part of this documentary, Hell or High Seas. Taylor Gregor, Navy aviation rescue swimmer, veteran, and captain, his idea to raise awareness about PTSD by sailing to Cape Horn off the coast of Chile, which they did. I don't think that's too much of a spoiler to the end of the film, because here they are talking about it with our other guest, Glenn Holston, documentary storyteller, and director of Hell or High Seas. Here's a comment from Rick, who says, I'm a veteran of both the Vietnam and Gulf Wars. I think when you come back home, you have an experience where you have to deal with all on your own. When in combat, you have people to the left and right of you who understand you're all in this together. Taylor, you weren't in combat, but nonetheless, can you relate to what Rick was just saying there?
Yeah, absolutely. That's something we get a lot. Now at the foundation we started, that's something that's heard every single time we set sail, is you go through it alone whenever you get back, and you don't understand. Whenever you're overseas, when you're on deployments, if you're going through something, you've got a group of 30, 40 guys. You're like, hey, man, are any of you guys experiencing this? Are you having this? I mean, most vividly, I remember that comes to my head, was the first time I heard ringing in my ears. My hearing was going out from the helicopters. And I was sitting on a couch in our shop, and I looked at the guy. His name's Chris Means, next to us, and I was like, dude, do you hear ringing at all? And he's like, yeah, all the time. Uh-huh. I'm like, I can't hear anymore. I was like, oh, okay, so this is going to happen, you know, flying in these things. He was like, yeah, your hearing's gone. I'm like, ah, okay. So when you get out, you don't have anybody to sit next to and be like, dude, is your body running away from you? Yeah. Do you have these thoughts? Are you seeing these things? Are you living in these moments? You don't have that. So I thought I was the only one, because nobody was talking about it. The guys that I deployed with, you know, nobody would mention it. I just didn't know. I had no idea. So I just assumed I was the only one going through it. So it's different than whenever you're overseas. Overseas, you can kind of catch those things right away. But when you're back here by yourself, you don't really have that group to fall back on.
Yeah, you can feel so alone. To you, Stephen, at one point you meet some British, I guess, Navy, military there in the same port as the two of you were. What did they tell you about how the British military handles reentry?
You know, they actually had a really fascinating program, and Taylor always speaks so well to this, so I'll hand it back over to him. But they use sailing as a method of decompression. Wow. for their guys and girls that go on deployments, and then, you know, maybe they're between deployments, maybe they've finished up and that's their last. But, you know, I think it's such a great concept, and it's exactly what we're trying to emulate, basically, with our journey. So the serendipity of us kind of coming across them in the middle of the Panama Canal, and a part that's not really showed in the documentary is they helped us get through the Panama Canal. So they ended up being a really powerful encounter throughout the entire journey for us. And I think that's just a testament to the documentary, but also, you know, just this issue as a whole.
And Taylor, if you can expand on that and even describe for most veterans, what is the process of leaving the military?
The process whenever I was getting out of the military, it's kind of a joke. It was kind of laugh at it. It's like whenever you're getting out, you go spend 5 days at this program called TAFS, Transition Assistance Program. And they teach you how to apply for government jobs. And then during that time, you get your DD-214 settled and all your paperwork done. And that's the process. That's it. Yeah. And there wasn't one time in that where PTSD was talked about, how to deal with it, how to live with it. where to go or anything yet. None of that was talked about. That's one of the things that we're trying to change right now.
Well, you have a sailing program for veterans, right?
We do. Yeah, it's called American Odysseus Sailing Foundation. We sail out of Kema, Texas. This last year was the first year we were really operating. We took out 56 veterans last year. We sailed down the coast of Texas, take guys out for 3 or 4 days, and you know, we get a group of 6 to 8 guys out at a time, and girls and women. Kind of talk about these things, and that's kind of part of our film too. Is adventure therapy. So you're not in a weird room with a therapist that just got out of college. You're on a boat with 6 to 8 other people who went through what you're going through, and you're in an environment where your adrenaline's running, but your endorphins are running too. So it's not like when you're in the military and cortisol is pushed through your body. It's a healthy environment where you're getting your body moving and your brain starting to activate again, and it's pretty great. Yeah, it's your lifeblood now.
And Glenn, what did you learn about PTSD putting this film together?
Well, the one interesting thing that I did learn is that within the military community, there was this sort of rift between combat veterans and non-combat veterans. And when we were actually trying to raise money to make this film, I heard back from some people who were connected with combat veterans that didn't think that non-combat veterans could, in fact, have PTSD. So one of the things that I really felt strongly about this film exploring was this non-combat veteran experience, and to try to educate the whole community and the veteran community as well that people like Taylor can, in fact, and do, in fact, have these experiences. What I think this film also says, which is of all the work that I try to do, is that recovery is possible, and there's a path to recovery, and that, as I often say, that you're not alone. So
that's a power. Yeah, no, it's a powerful message. Let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Glenn Holston. He's a documentary storyteller. I said this before, but I'll say it again. He's an alum of WHYY here in Philadelphia, director of this documentary, Hell or High Seas. Taylor Greger, Navy aviation rescue swimmer veteran and captain of this boat and this mission. Stephen O'Shea, author, filmmaker, and first mate, also narrator of the film. And again, you can join us. Any questions or comments, email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. The documentary Hell or High Seas tells the story of two sailors embarking on an adventure of a lifetime as they brave the treacherous waters around Cape Horn, Chile, and also their adventures reaching that destination. Our guests are U.S. Navy veteran Taylor Greger, who was struggling with PTSD and suicide at the time. Also with us, his friend and author, Stephen O'Shea, and Glenn Holston, who is the director of this documentary. And if you want to tweet us, you can do it at WHYY Radio Times. You can also call us 1-888-477-9499. Let me play another clip from the film, and this is Taylor explaining the atmosphere as the crew prepares for the next big storm.
It's cold as hell. Now the storm's rolling in. Looking at 12-foot seas right now. It's supposed to keep picking up. Yeah, here we are.
Here we are. Taylor, was there, there are times when it just feels like this mission can't go on. There are just too many problems. What was the low point for you?
Yeah. This is pretty much every leg of our trip.
Had its low moments, right?
Yeah, one thing that didn't make the film that I think is kind of funny and sums it up. So we were about 600, almost 700 miles off the coast of Chile. The boat caught a fire and we started sinking. We had to come into land. And when we were coming to Chile, we got hit by the first recorded in our history anticyclone that hit the coast of Chile. It's never happened before. It was a Cat 1, but I mean, it was just a testament to, like, every time we were coming in to shore, we'd get hit by some hurricane, some storm, even after the boat caught fire. That was, that moment was definitely my lowest, my I wouldn't say lowest, kind of isn't the right word, but the point where I was like, ah, we're done. We're definitely done. There's no way we can keep going.
We're not going to make it. We're not going to make it to shore. We're just not going to make it for this journey, this adventure.
Yeah, our boat, we were sinking, and any major component was out on our boat. It caught fire, and we didn't really see another way to go forward. But when we got to land that night, you know, we got some beers and some burgers at this place in Chile. It was one of our best feeling moments of the trip, other than Cape Horn, because we made it to shore alive. But that's when we connected Wi-Fi and we started getting messages from people back home and stuff. We found out another really close friend of John and mine that deployed with us, he killed himself while we were out there on that leg. And, you know, we kind of didn't say anything when that happened. We knew that we were done. And then we saw that message. We were like, we can't finish. We can't stop this. We've got to find a way to keep going for them, for their family, and make sure it doesn't happen again.
And Stephen, for you, what was the low point?
You know, for me, it was probably right after that, because I felt as strongly as both Taylor and John about continuing on. And then, you know, Taylor and I kind of got in an argument about how we should proceed and whether we should go for Cape Horn in the middle of winter or try and pull into a port. And ultimately, you know, I ended up flying home because our argument escalated, and Taylor was also trying to be conscious of our safety. So, you know, he decided to kind of go on that leg from Valparaiso to Valdivia by himself. And so I think the moments leading up to that were the hardest for me. And that was kind of the low point, because it felt like, you know, we'd come all this way, and I didn't know at that point how things were going to continue, whether Taylor was going to finish the trip by himself or whether he was going to pull into port.
Taylor, we see you by yourself on your boat, you know, in the ocean, amid all the elements. And there are times, at least the video, if I felt like this guy's lost his mind. I mean, did you feel like you were on the edge of something?
I was on the edge of something for sure. What that is, I don't know. I don't know. That time was kind of weird for me. I loved it. I was reading this book by Bernard Mortessier called The Long Way, and he was a solo sailor that sailed around the world. So it was kind of cool reading his stories and be out there by myself as well. It was hard. Yeah, I mean, the boat was in no condition to keep going, but I would say it was one of the least stressful moments of the trip for me, because I don't like being a captain. I don't know at all. It's a lot of responsibility that I have a hard time dealing with. When you have other people on your boat, you're down below deck constantly thinking if they fell overboard or broke something or if you're going to make it back to shore alive. So, it's weird. There's a lot of different emotions during that leg, for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, it was just you and you, right?
Yeah.
Glenn, let me go to you. So in terms of putting this story together, and I must say that you did go down to Patagonia when the ship sort of pulled into this, what is it, the Straits of Magellan, right, into Patagonia, which was just gorgeous. What was it like for you to be down there?
It was gorgeous. And it was, you know, I went after they had succeeded in their journey. So I went with, you know, I knew the story holes that I had to fill with the interview with Stephen and the interview with Taylor and the footage that we needed to capture. So it was a very sort of mission-oriented trip, but it was quite stunning. And, you know, the trust that Stephen and Taylor gave to me throughout the whole project and the whole team, you know, our producer Shane Gregg played a huge role in this film. The trust that they gave to me throughout the project and then in that interviews, those series of interviews, was just wonderful, because I knew after that trip that we had these incredible elements for a great film.
Let me go back to you, Taylor, and to you, Stephen. And you do you? I mean, maybe you could describe for you what it was like to walk the hills and through the glaciers that we see in Patagonia. Taylor, can you describe what that was like?
Yeah, it was life changing. I still think about those days a lot, and it's kind of the motivation for our nonprofit now is to get guys down there. I think once you see something that beautiful in this world, you're going to want to stay alive in it to see it again. So the goal is to bring other guys going through what I was going through down there to Patagonia to experience it. I mean, you're anchored between glaciers that people don't see in this world. You're in untouched land. You know, it's the most beautiful part of the world I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of it. It's cool. It's just raw nature beauty. It's incredible. It's breathtaking. It's the best way to put it.
What does it sound like? I'm a radio person, so what does it sound what does it sound like?
Oh gosh, yeah. It's like when you're anchored between three different glaciers and you hear these million year old glaciers cracking around you, it hits you in your chest. It's just a deep boom. I mean, the energy that comes off of it is just incredible. It's just this deep roaring, cracking sound. I don't know. Yeah, I've never heard anything like it before. And then you have penguins and whales swimming around your boat in the morning. It's beautiful. It's paradise.
Stephen, you want to add to that?
No, I think Taylor hit it right on the head. You know, that was was definitely one of the moments that we were looking forward to the most. I think when we cast off, that the list of the top five things I was looking forward to on our trip, Patagonia was the number one. So I'm glad we got to pull in and anchor and explore.
And you got a break in the weather, Stephen, so that you felt like we're gonna make it to Cape Horn.
Yep, and that was a minor miracle, honestly. Us talking to some of the other cruisers down there and seeing the water, you know, we capture it in the documentary. The morning that we cast off for Cape Horn, the water was just like glass, and we hadn't. We spent almost 2 months down there around Puerto Williams, and we never saw the water like that again.
And to you, Taylor, we see, you know, you're heading for Cape Horn. This was your destination, and you're tearful. What are you thinking? What are you feeling at that moment?
All of my emotions were coming out then. when we were, one thing the film kind of left out there, we were watching these massive systems roll in over us. So down there, it's kind of dynamic. One of the reasons that makes it so dangerous is you get these massive storms that in the States up here on our latitude, you could watch these things roll in every week or so, you know, take a week to get to you. Down there, the same size system with 50 knots of wind and 30, 40 foot seas would change every 30, 40 minutes. Is how fast these massive clouds roll in. So for about 8 hours of us sailing up to the Horn, we were watching this just death storm roll in. It's this wall of black. We were all kind of looking at it like, well, now we're going to die. This is it, you know. We're not going to make it. We made it all the way down here, and we're going to hit by this one storm that's just going to kill us. So we had a lot of time to think about that, and it was pretty heartbreaking. Yeah, I was definitely heartbroken, and I cried a lot.
But yeah,
like Stephen said, it was just some miracle, and thank God we caught it on camera because nobody would believe us. As soon as we got up, we were about a mile and a half away from Cape Horn, and the sun just kind of parted the clouds, and I don't know what happened to the storm. It just disappeared. It was gone.
And there off in the distance was Cape Horn.
Yeah, it was wild. You have to see it. You got to watch it to believe it. I can't put words to it.
Well, Glenn, let me go back to you. And, I mean, here you are, you know, piecing together, what, hundreds of hours of filmmaking. I should say that's Taylor's son, a daughter, I should say, who's there in the background, and we're happy to have her. But to you, Glenn, you know, piecing together, I mean, how do you tell a story like this, but also how do you end a story like this?
Well, we actually had two editing rooms going. This is something I've never done before, just because of the volume of the footage. And Stephen and Taylor knew their footage pretty well, but they couldn't, you know, tell us every what was on frame by frame. So in one editing room, we were kind of doing high-speed passing through the footage, literally at high speed, I was saying, oh, stop there, what is that doing? And I remember the scene that you're talking about now where Taylor was tearing up because he couldn't see Cape Horn.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, stop that. Is Taylor crying there? What's going on here? And then we watched it, and the editor, Dave Bauer, and I were just like, wow, this is so strong and so moving. And then we'd rough out that scene and then bring it over to the editing room where the editor, Vic Carino, was, and he would fine-tune things. So it was a wonderful challenge as a craftsperson. I mean, we are filmmakers. We are making a story. And then how to end it? It kind of ended itself.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you that.
No. We don't. Yeah, exactly. And for you, Stephen, what were your emotions as you saw Cape Horn off in the distance?
You know, that was a really powerful experience for all of us. And I think John, Taylor, and I all took turns crying.
I love it when men cry. I just have to say, I just want to put that out there. So,
so it was, you know, it was kind of like this, the pinnacle of our entire journey. And it was realized in that moment. And it felt incredibly fulfilling, I guess, is the best way to put it.
I mean, because you survived, you made it. Mission accomplished in a way, Stephen?
Yeah, you know, in a way that was, it felt like we had succeeded, I guess. We'd accomplished what we'd set out to accomplish. And granted, we still had to get back to the Beagle Channel and Puerto Williams, which ended up being its own dramatic challenge. But that moment around Cape Horn was like a break. It's like we all just kind of let our guards down for a minute, and we were able to because the weather opened up for, and you know, honestly, that's another part that's kind of left out. It was probably only about 30 minutes that we had somewhat calm weather and clear skies, and then another system blew in.
Wow.
So it's very tumultuous down there, and it was all short lived, but once we got back to shore for sure, I think that was when the relief hit, and I might've slept for a good 20 hours that night.
Yeah, I can imagine there were not good night's sleep during this trip. Taylor, there's something you say, I think it's near the beginning of the film, where you said you wanted to be the person you used to be. I mean, this was the struggle as you were dealing with your PTSD and you know, all that you had seen and been through. Do you still feel that way, or did you become this other person that you are today, if you know what I mean?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. I'm always asked that. That's kind of one of my biggest changes in my life that happened on this trip. Yeah, whenever I was going through it all, I was holding on to who I was before the military. You know, I was a happy guy, like, you know, just random singing and being happy and enjoying the world. And when I got back, I wasn't that. And that kind of, you know, sent me down the spiral even more because I was like, I'm not this guy anymore. If I'm not happy, I can't be happy anymore. And all I wanted to do was to be that person again. And then about halfway through the trip, you know, kind of switched for me, and I was like, well, you know, this is who I am now, and this is what I have to live with, and I have to find a way to keep on living with this person that I've become. It's kind of a big moment, you know. Yeah. I just came to terms with, you know, I have PTSD, and this is what my life is, and I could either make it better or kind of sulk about it. And so, you know, change from suffering from who I was and what I was living with, and into living with PTSD and being a part of this world again and embracing who I'd become. So yeah, it was kind of a pivotal moment for me. Definitely something I took away from this trip.
Yeah. Well, I took it away from the film because I thought it was also a powerful moment as well. Well, I want to thank all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Taylor Grigor, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having us.
You're very welcome. And he's a Navy aviation rescue swimmer veteran, captain of the Old Lady. Also with us, Stephen O'Shea. He's a author. He's a filmmaker. He was the first mate, also narrator of this film. And Stephen O'Shea, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And also with us, Glenn Holston, documentary storyteller, director of Hell or High Seas. And you can go to www.hellorhighseas.com to stream the video and to get more information, and especially information for veterans who might be struggling with PTSD. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. To replay this hour and many more, go to WHYY.org. Look for Radio Times under programs, or you can download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.